Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog. Today, Julie Fudge-Smith and I are talking about a topic that comes up all the time in dog training lessons, which is, should I let my dog get on the furniture? And my answer is always, do you want your dog on the furniture? So that's what we're going to talk about today. And interestingly enough, we have different answers in our own households. So Julie, why don't you tell us how you answer the question, should I let my dog on my furniture?
Well, I actually respond in much the same way, which is, well, do you want him on the furniture? And then and associated with that, I get the, and it's always so chagrin. I know I shouldn't tell you this.
Yeah.
You're going to hate me. You're going to think I'm a terrible mm-hmm. dog. I'm thinking, what are you doing? You're like, I let him sleep on the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
there's so much guilt about it. People put so much pressure on families about that. It's crazy.
They really do. And then there's somehow that they created the great dog sin by mm-hmm. by letting their dog sleep on the bed. And yep. I usually tell them something about, well, you know, I got to tell you, I've had as many as three dogs sleeping on my bed. So I personally feel that having dogs on the furniture or having the dog sleep on the bed is fine. It's not a matter of dominance. It's not a matter of them trying to exert their authority.
Take over the world.
Right, right. I just don't think that's happening. I do have some caveats, though. I mean, I don't think it can be a free-for-all. Because I think when you do that, then you are inviting some trouble. So I usually ask him a few questions. And one of the first questions I ask is, how does the dog behave when he gets on the bed? You know, does he guard it as if this is something of value? Because if mm-hmm. your dog is on the couch or on a chair or on the bed and he's resource guarding, meaning he's not letting anybody else on the bed, then that's an issue that needs to be addressed, and that's not a dog who should be allowed on furniture, at least at this point.
And that comes up a lot of times, interestingly enough, with couples for me, where they'll say, like, oh, we all get in bed at night, and life is good, and then in the middle of the night, my husband gets up to go to the bathroom, but then Buster won't let him get back on the bed. Yeah, problem.
Yeah.
That's one we need to address. So, you know, Buster doesn't get to decide that at 3 a.m. it's, you know, just us two now. Forget it. He's out of here.
Right. And I had one woman one time tell me how proud she was. She thought it was just hysterical and how funny. And she was so proud of her dog because he wouldn't let her husband in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not thinking
that. That's when you say, we're not marriage counselors, but that could be a problem.
That's right. I'm not thinking that your husband thinks this is nearly as funny as you and you know, Rover do. But you're right. We do have different scenarios in our house. Dogs are allowed on the furniture in my house. But one of the caveats there is they have to be invited. Mm-hmm. So if I'm sitting
and
on the couch.
I think invitation is a really important piece that most people don't do.
Yes.
So when you have the idea that a dog has to be invited, you've solved almost all of the problems with having dogs on furniture, which are,
correct.
You know, you have guests come over and your dog is leaping up to sit next to them and they would prefer not to. Well, if the dog has to wait to be invited, we've solved that problem. Or you have a mm-hmm. new baby and you've just come home from the hospital and you'd really like the poodle not to be licking the baby's face. Well, if the dog has to be invited up, we're not having to worry about that as much. So the invitation piece, I think, is the part that most families don't naturally think of.
Correct. I would agree with you on that. And that's not that hard to institute, especially if you're working on having sit be your dog's default behavior. So that if your dog has to sit for everything, like I have to sit before you open the door to the backyard. I have to sit before you put my food bowl down. I have to sit while you put my leash on. Then sit becomes what I need to do to say please. So mm-hmm. if your dog's already doing that, then it's pretty easy to tell your dog to sit while you sit down on the couch. Have him stay there for a couple of seconds. And then what I usually do is I just pat the sofa, and that's the invitation for the mm-hmm. dog to get up. So I don't think it's as hard as people think it is either, especially if your dog has a pretty strong sit that he uses as a way to say please anyway.
And what is your cue for asking them to get down?
I tell them, time to get down.
Well, it's a fancy queue.
It's a fancy queue
at your house.
Yeah, it's like,
so
okay.
In my house, I grew up where dogs were never allowed on furniture. And then when I was getting dogs as an adult, I was getting relatively big dogs. And I also, this is our dirty little secret, have a husband who's not as big of a dog fan as I am. Shocking. Oh, I know. So our compromise really was the dogs weren't on the furniture. But I've got to tell you, the dog I currently have would dearly love to be on the furniture. And honestly, I would love it too. But I'm not changing the rule for this dog. We're just sort of leaving it where it is. I'm not convinced, though, that the next dog won't find itself curled up on my lap.
Yes.
Because now I'm not raising little kids and I'm not in the chaotic household.
Right.
You know, but we'll have to sort of look at some of that. So it depends on what works best for your house. There isn't a right or wrong answer. There are also dogs who are allowed on some furniture.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit trickier because we sometimes have to decide very clearly what those criteria are.
Yes, and I do have that in my household. My dogs are not allowed on the living room sofa. And anybody who goes and over to the sofa is like, wait, Mom's coming. I can't get on the sofa. But that's what's nice about the fact that dogs sometimes have a difficult time generalizing behaviors. You can use that to your advantage to teach them, no, you can't get on the couch. And so that's just always been the rule. You cannot get on the couch, and you come over and you start, and it's and I redirect them to do something else. Make sure that there are dog beds around. That's another terrific way to, because you know what? Sometimes they just need something soft. I need something soft and comfortable too. So, you know, getting a nice dog bed for your dog will help to discourage him from getting on the sofa.
And having that dog bed in the room where you hang out.
Yes.
So a lovely, comfy dog bed that's in the kitchen when you're hanging out in the living room is not actually more appealing to the dog. They want to be where you are. That actually reminds me a little bit of years ago, I had a golden retriever. And when she got older, she started losing her hearing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would come home, I would occasionally find an old golden retriever sleeping on my couch. And we would both pretend that hadn't occurred. So I would simply look around in other places and make enough vibration and noise, and she would wake up and, suddenly get off the couch. And then it would be like, oh, hello. Now, as a younger dog, I would have corrected that and prevented that. But by the time she was old and it was comfy and she wasn't hurting anything, we just pretended it hadn't happened. It was our little secret.
I love that.
A little Midas. She was like, oh my goodness, you're here. You caught me with my curlers still
in. You
should
have texted me that you were coming. So I think I'd like to get back a little bit to how do you know when your dog shouldn't be on the couch. There can be very subtle signals that your dog is giving. And I think it's important to really pay close attention to those signals because resource guarding may just, if you're lucky, it's going to be one thing. But if you're not lucky, it's going to start to spread into other areas as well. So one of the first things I look for is if my dog is on a sofa or on something he's not supposed to be, when I approach him, what's his response? If he stiffens, then I'm like, okay, you're telling me that you're beginning to guard this. And then it can escalate from there. It can be a hard stare. It can be a lip curl. It can be, pushing myself deeper into the sofa cushions.
Mm-hmm.
These are all things you need to look for. And at that point, that's a dog who shouldn't be on the sofa. Because what happens if a child comes by and says, oh, Buster, you're not supposed to be on the sofa, tries to get the dog off, there could be a bite there. What happened to us one time is that Rebel, we don't know what he was, so we found him in a trench, a Confederate trench on the Chancellorsville battlefield in Virginia. So we called him our Confederate trenching setter. But whatever he was very sweet and very cute, but he loved the couch in our sunroom, which at that point was not a couch I wanted a dog on. So he was on there one time, and my daughter went over, put her hand on his collar to lead him off the sofa, and he fell and got a neck injury.
Ooh.
Yeah, and luckily steroids came to the rescue, and we didn't have to spend the $2,000 on the MRI. But it's one of those things is that it's real important that you also have an off cue.
Right.
Which is why I started doing, okay, guys, time to get up or time to get off. You got to go. Yes. Something. And usually my standing up helps as well for them to get off. But I think it's important to recognize when they're beginning to tell you, this is my sofa, not yours. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to let them up, you got to teach them to get down.
Right. And what the appropriate behavior is while they're on there. Because just yes. this morning, we did an appointment, and this was this beautiful house with little breakfast nook table with high stool chairs. So sit down on the chairs, and this American Eskimo mix leaps up onto another chair right beside me. Mm-hmm. He is not happy that I'm in his house. So I'm like, oh, fabulous. And then he got on the table and started walking across it. And the owner was appalled. She was like, he's never gotten on the table before. Now, he sits in that chair when I eat my breakfast, but he's never gotten on the table before. And he's like coming into the space here of me and Pam, the other trainer I was with. And he's just like, you're in my house. And it's like, look at you. So the fact that he was allowed on the chair made it much easier for him to make that next step over.
Absolutely.
Onto, here I am standing on the table telling you about, I would prefer you didn't come to my home. Whereas the other three dogs in the house were all using the ground, and they were all delighted we were in the home. So it was unfortunate who made these choices. But in that case, he was on the table deliberately.
Right.
He was taking space, and the owner really needed to see that, you know, he needs to be invited up and invited down kind of thing, because right. he pushes his boundaries a little bit more than the other three who were, you know, charming and delighted that we were visiting.
Right. And it's that whole sort of boundary thing that you need to be very aware of. And that's when it can have problems like the dog gets into bed and gets settled in and realizes, you know, I'd like a little bit more space here. It's a lot more yes. comfortable when Roger leaves the bed. So mm-hmm. maybe Roger doesn't have to come back. He can, you know, there's a nice comfy dog bed in this room.
Right.
Roger could have that.
Indeed.
I don't think Roger would agree to that. But yeah, it's really important to understand your dog's body language here again so that you don't make those mistakes of allowing a dog on a couch who really shouldn't be there. When you said about the client's dog getting it, I actually was at a beautiful home with a lovely client, and her dog had dog-to-dog issues. And we were talking. She said, oh, please, let's sit down at one of her dining room tables. And so we sat down, and she pulled a chair out, and the dog gets in the chair, and he's sitting on the chair between the two of us at the table because, you know.
Because that's what you do.
That's what you do. So he did not get on the table, but it wouldn't have surprised me in the least if that had been the next move.
One thing to think about with the furniture is that I think we want to look at dogs earning their privileges.
Right.
So it's harder to go back to no dogs on the furniture than it is to gradually say, okay, now you've earned the right to be on the furniture, or you've earned the right to sleep on the bed, or any of these other things. So when you bring a new dog in, having a discussion with everyone who lives in the house of what are the rules and getting some agreement, because it's really not helpful to the dog.
Oh,
if
it's not.
We have different rules depending on who happens to be in the room. That's very confusing. But then starting slow and working up to, you know, does this dog never mark in the house? Does this dog not chew anything? Does this dog have nice manners? Does this dog not, you know, get into guest space? Well, then, okay, we can probably let him up onto the furniture, these kinds of things. But if there's like, well, he's usually good, is not yet ready to have those privileges.
That's right. So. And he's 150 pounds, that's not that big a dog, is it? Really?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it really is. But even so, and I think people tend to be a little bit more tolerant, or owners do, or they want their little dogs to have all the comforts of life, and their little mm-hmm. dogs can get onto
yes.
couches and stuff. And they tend to allow that more often than those of us with larger dogs do.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say that little dogs don't need to earn that privilege as well.
Right.
Because
right.
they can be just as possessive. And mm-hmm. you know what? One of their bites can hurt just as much as that of a big dog. And maybe the owner really doesn't want your Bichon Frise sitting in her lap licking her face. Yes. So I think it's important to remember that in this case, while size might dictate a little bit of where you allow the dog to go, it shouldn't be irrelevant to the discussion, because it's really the right. nature of the dog, not the size of the dog, that matters whether or not they get that privilege.
Yes. And it's helpful if your dog has some good sense of body awareness for their own body and for yours.
Yes.
And I mean, like, if we're just going to stereotype by breed, labs tend to be a little oblivious about where their body ends and yours begins. But I had a client a couple years ago who had an abdominal surgery, and her Bichon always sat on a chair with her. I mean, she had an easy chair and the dog would sit with her. But this dog had no body awareness and was really hurting the lady. And so she was like, I just need her to not be on the chair with me. Well, from the dog's perspective, all of a sudden she'd been cut off from her comfort, her space, where she right. wanted to be, because she didn't have an invitation up or an invitation down. And she was so completely clueless. I mean, she was like, I'm just going to be right here on your stomach. And he's like, no. So really being conscious of, I mean, we can't predict everything that's going to happen in the next 10 years.
Right.
But if you had a sprained ankle, could you be comfortable on this piece of furniture with this dog? If not, then let's think about what we could train to make that more comfortable, or had a surgery, or had, I don't know, a migraine, you know, just life.
Right. Right.
How can we make things work for you and for your dog when you're not in a perfect situation?
Right. And actually, I had that very scenario just last year when I had foot surgery.
Yeah, you were disabled quite a while.
I really was. And for the first 3 weeks, I could not even have my foot, like, look at the floor. It's, you know, they had to be completely separated. So one of the things is I had my crutches right by the bed, so I needed to make sure that the dogs are not going to knock my crutches over. So one of the things that I did do, and Bingley was getting a little older, is I put a footstool near the end of the bed. So that was his entrance onto the bed. And he was always been a good dog at cuddle at the end of the bed. And, of course, that's where my foot was now.
Mm-hmm.
But because he had been used to sort of cuddling around me, it worked out pretty well. And it was interesting because when our grand dog Tex was visiting and I had to have a second surgery on my foot, they tag teamed being in bed with me. And they were both really good about sort of going around. My foot was up on a pillow, so they'd come around the pillow and they'd put their head on my thigh and they'd snuggle up with me. But that was after years of sort of working out a compromise together. Mm-hmm. And then also to giving them a very direct way, this is, you cannot leap onto the bed on top
right.
of me. You have to come up,
right.
Having that very clear entrance into the bed. So, and then I had a surgery several years before that when I had my, I had some abdominal surgery, and Brad was convinced that the dogs couldn't be in the room. And I'm like, no, the dogs have to be in the room because that's how I recover. being draped with retrievers is apparently really a good recovery.
It's very restorative.
It is. I needed very little pain medication because I had, you know, retriever hair all over me. But that was really important to me. But when Brad had surgery, he really didn't want the dogs in.
Right.
And so that's when we brought out the baby gates again.
Mm-hmm.
And that they, I had to ask him, is it okay if I bring the dogs in? And so I think that's the other thing you can do too in a temporary situation is, you know, for a while the dogs are just going to either have to cuddle with somebody else, or, you know, baby gates are an effective means to keep them out of
right.
a surgery recovery
and
room.
And the baby gate prevents them from making a poor choice.
Right.
That they don't know is a poor choice. So then they don't have the moment of friction where you'd fuss or, you know, get off the bed, ow, ow. You know,
yes.
So we prevented that moment, which is even more upsetting than the, oh, no, I'm on the other side of the gate feeling.
Right. And then you can always put like a dog bed on the other side of the gate. And the nice thing
yeah.
about baby gates is it's better than a closed door. A closed
yeah.
door, the dog's like, I can't even see my person. But mm-hmm. now at least I see my person, and I don't know why, but I'm on the side of the gate with the Kong and the dog bed, but at least I can see my person. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's a nice compromise for a temporary situation. So what yeah. would you tell somebody who's like your client, whose dog was now guarding the bed in the middle of the night, or whose client, like I had I was just talking to someone today whose dog had gone from guarding the food bed to guarding their daughter. And
mm-hmm.
So the resource guarding had escalated, even though they've done everything I've asked them to do. So we've been talking about maybe we need to get some additional help besides what I can do.
Yes.
But what would you tell somebody whose dog had started to guard the furniture?
Well, I think that you lose the privilege of being on the bed. And then in different households, that answer is different ways.
Right.
So I have had clients use a baby gate and put the dog in a walk-in closet. So again, the dog is in the room, but not in the room. You know, like, right. Here you are, we're together, we've got it. I've had clients put dog in another room. I've had clients use a tether to the tether to the foot of their bed with a dog bed right there. So that if the dog jumps on the bed, they'll feel it and they can redirect the dog, but the dog can't go mark all around the house. This one was a big marker, the one I'm thinking of. Whatever kind of tool you're using, with a tether, of course, we do want to be careful. We wouldn't ever want a dog to get tangled. So you do need to be looking at your equipment and your layout for anything like that. But if a dog is rehearsing a behavior that you don't like, practice makes perfect.
That's
so
right.
If you're going to growl when someone gets up in the middle of the night and not let that person back in bed, you can't have that situation. What change are we going to make?
Right. The other thing I have found, too, is if you don't have baby gates and your dog likes crates are another good one.
Yeah. Yeah, crates are great.
Yeah, I am.
And we ideally should have every dog like having their crate. And a lot of dogs, once they grow through adolescence, never use their crate again. But it could be really valuable to keep using it from time to time so that it isn't a penalty. It's just like, yeah, this is one other nice place I have to go.
That's right. And then that's another key, too.
It's really all about choices.
Yes, it is.
What's another key, too?
When you said a nice place, I'm thinking that's it. You also have to make it a nice place for them to be that's not on the bed. So that maybe there's, like in my office, right next to my desk and by the dog bed is a DAP diffuser. So when Zuzu needs to check out, she will remove herself from the situation and come into my office and just chill. In fact, that's what she's doing right now. So you can make the crate or the dog bed or whatever a really nice place to be so they don't feel like, okay, I have just been sent to the gulag.
Right.
No, it doesn't have to be. If it is a gulag, it could be a really nice gulag. You know?
The Hilton gulag.
That's right. So you may think it's a gulag, but we want them to think that they've just checked into the Ritz.
Yes.
So you can make it work that way as well. But if it is a serious resource issue, and it seems to be escalating, and it does seem to be leaching into other areas. So now it's not just the sofa in the living room; it's now the dog bed in the kitchen, and it's the bed, and it's the food bowl. These are not things that you want to mess with. You're going to need some help to try and address that situation.
You should definitely get a trainer involved,
right? And especially a positive reinforcement trainer, because if you punish a dog for something like this, they're just going to sort of tuck that behavior deep inside, and it will come back out, and it will come back out in a fury. So, all right.
But the good news is most dogs don't have that problem.
That's
right. And most dogs are delighted to curl up on the couch next to you and just hang out and binge watch Netflix all you want to.
That's
so
right.
If that makes you happy, and that makes your dog happy, then I have no objection to it whatsoever.
I have no objection either. So I think then that wraps it up for this week.
And I think it does.
All right. Well, thanks, Colleen. We'll see you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.